Hello. I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Vaidaber Adonai El Moshe Lemar Naso Esraosh B'nei Gerashon Gamheim Levei Savosam Lemishbechosam. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, take a census of the sons of Gershon as well, according to their father's household, according to their families. And Bachodesh Hashalishi Litzes Bnei Yisrael Me Eretz Mitzrayim Bayom Hazeh Bo'u Midbar Sinai. In the third month from the exodus of the children of Israel from Egypt, on this day they arrived at the wilderness of Sinai. Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Naso and for Chag HaShavuot. That's why you heard two psukim being read, the first two psukim of Naso and the first pasuk of the Torah reading of Shavuot morning. Recording and first broadcast the 29th day of both Iyar and May, Yom Chamishi, Thursday. And this is the last time for another many, many months that I'll be able to announce the date in both Hebrew and English months. The same, we've had a run of a total of 87 dates that have matched so far this year, with a break of a month in between. And the next time is not for another 2.5 years. And the next time, this specific corresponding dates occurs is 76 years from now. So whether Torah Tidbits Audio will still be available or not, we'll have to wait and see. Okay, Wednesday. No, let's go back to Tuesday. Tuesday was the eve of Yom Yerushalayim, so at Mincha we didn't say Tachanun. Yesterday, Wednesday, Yom Yerushalayim, we didn't say Tachanun. Today, Thursday, is Erev Rosh Chodesh, which means we didn't say Tachanun at Mincha either, and from Rosh Chodesh until after the 12th of Sivan, we don't say Tachanun. So the Tehillim we'll be doing now is Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121. Shir lama'alot, esa einai el haharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara v'ashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula. Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Speaking of Yom Yerushalayim, which I won't do too much of since it's past already, and I'd rather focus on Parshat Naso and Shavuot, which will happen before the next show, I just want to give you my picture in my mind of the period from Pesach to Shavuot. Picture Pesach high up on the page in the left-hand corner, and Shavuot high up on the page in the right-hand corner. These are two Torah Chagim, two of the three Shalosh Regalim, and we put them high up because of that. Now, there was a string or a line that connected Pesach to Shavuot, which was tight enough to go straight across with hardly a sag. I might be mixing metaphors, but try to picture as I am speaking. And that was the period of the counting of the Omer in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. As I mentioned several times in the past weeks, when we go from the count, goes from the day of the bringing of the first barley offering until the bringing of the wheat offering, the new wheat offering, Mincha Chadasha Lashem, of Shavuot, and that's the description of the counting period, then we can see it as a line or a slight parabolic line or a catenary, really, that goes from Pesach to Shavuot with hardly a sag. Now, take the reality of our time, and our time has been for quite a long while, with no Beit HaMikdash, the line between Pesach and Shavuot sags very low. You have to picture it as a string which drops all the way down the page. And yet, there is a point on that string, the 33rd day of the Omer, Lag BaOmer, that's a day designated for celebrating. And therefore, we're going to take that point on the string and lift it towards the top of the page. So now we have two dipping portions of the string and a high point in the middle. How high? Put it where you want. And now we have Yom Ha'atzma'ut and Yom Yerushalayim, one between Pesach and Lag BaOmer, and the other between Lag BaOmer and Shavuot. And they also take the sagging pieces of this Omer period, and they raise it up again. So now we have, I don't know how you want to describe it, but we've got high points here. You have Rosh Chodesh Iyar, and you have Rosh Chodesh Sivan. You can lift the line a little bit also. There's Pesach Sheni, and there are Shabbatot in this period. So the line does not sag all the way depressingly down. The line has various dates that pick it up and begin to smooth it out, to restore it to the nice, smooth, straight connecting line between Pesach and Shavuot. I wrote a lead tidbit this week in the hard copy of Torah Tidbits, which you can find on the internet if you don't get a hard copy, at ttidbits.com. And the point that I was trying to make is that Shavuot is a potential culmination of what was started at Pesach. It has been the culmination and then gets returned to its potential culmination depending upon where the people of Israel are in Eretz Yisrael or outside, exile or otherwise, Beit HaMikdash or otherwise, and the status of Torah and otherwise. In other words, if Pesach represents coming out of Egypt, then been there, did it, we're out, we relive the experience every year at the Seder, we remember the Exodus from Egypt every day of our life, day and night, in the Shema, in Kiddush, in various and sundry mitzvot that we perform, and that's the Exodus. The culmination of what began as coming out of Egypt and becoming a nation includes two major, major events, namely the receiving of the Torah and the coming into Eretz Yisrael. As far as the receiving of the Torah is concerned, what's our scorecard there? How many Jews in this world at this time, what percentage of the Jewish population are Torah-observant Jews? Now, you have to vary that number depending on what you mean exactly by Torah Jews, because you have people who are maybe following a life with Torah values and not necessarily performance of all the mitzvot, and you have people who are meticulous about mitzvot. So the question is a little vague, and it'll have to stay that way. But the point is, if once upon a time, a long time ago, 3,300 plus years ago, we stood at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, ki ish echad b'lev echad, as one person with one heart, and we received the Torah with an enthusiasm, then one assumes that there was at least sometime 100% compliance with the dictates of the Torah, and now our numbers are somewhere below 100%. I don't want to get depressing about trying to guess at these percentages, but if we're not at 100% of Torah life, then Shavuot, which represents Zman Matan Torateinu, has now to be the time of potential receiving of the Torah. Each individual has to put himself somewhere on a continuum of the Jewish people, and hopefully there's improvement as you go along all the way. But as Zman Matan Torateinu, if you take a State of the Union honest look now, we still have a long way to go as far as Torah is concerned. There are, you know, you have to count how many yeshivot and how many students learning in yeshivot and how many other kind of frameworks are there for the disseminating of Torah and how successful they are or otherwise, and the Kiruv organizations, and a whole bunch of other factors that go into that, including, I should hope, Torah tidbits somewhere in there. And that boils down to a number that is not yet 100%, which means Shavuot is not yet the culmination of that which began on Pesach. Then you look at the other aspect of Shavuot, the other aspect and major event that followed the Exodus was coming to live in Israel. The original plan, as I've spoken about many, 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 many times, is that God intended to bring the nation out of Egypt, give us the Torah, take us into Eretz Yisrael, where we would live a life of Torah and live happily ever after. It hasn't happened yet. There were bright spots, and there are very black spots, and a lot of gray in between. And as far as living in Eretz Yisrael, until 100% of the Jews of the world live in Eretz Yisrael, if that's realistic or not, then Shavuot as Chag HaBikurim, Shavuot as the Shtei HaLechem, both of which are Beit HaMikdash, and not just Beit HaMikdash, but there is an implication in, let's say, the concept of Bikurim, that the Jewish people not only fulfill the mitzvah of the first fruits and bring them to the Kohen in the Beit HaMikdash, but there is a simcha, a joy, a genuine thrill and excitement and joy in having come out of Egypt and having gotten the Torah and having gotten to Eretz Yisrael. There are people, and I am glad to know many of them, who live in Israel, learn Torah, observe mitzvot, are big Baalei Chesed, who you look towards and you could say there is a person who has realized the plan that God had for all of us. And then you look around and you see the people who have not yet lived up to that potential. So Shavuot is a potential. Now, why did I mention all of this? I tell you the truth, I got a little carried away. So this fits into Shavuot and my introduction to Shavuot, and now let's go back and take a look at Parshat Naso. Almost 80% of the years, Naso is read right after Shavuot here in Eretz Yisrael, Bamidbar having been read the Shabbat before. In the remaining 20-20.5% of the time, Naso is the Shabbat before Purim, before Shavuot, sorry, and Bahalotcha is the one right after. It means that Naso is the parsha most associated with Shavuot, usually following it, sometimes preceding it, as it does this year. In Chutz La'aretz, the percentages are close to 90% after Shavuot, and a little more than 10% before Shavuot, like this year. The difference between Israel and Chutz La'aretz are the situations of a 13-month year, with Pesach being Shabbat. In Israel, it means Pesach is Shabbat to Friday, and the following day Shabbat, even though we're still Pesachdik, and we're still eating matzah, and we don't have chametz yet, it's still not Pesach anymore, and we resume reading the weekly portion. While in Chutz La'aretz, they're celebrating the eighth day of Pesach with special Torah reading, and that means that they fall behind us, or we go one ahead. And in a Shana Me'uberet, a 13-month year, we don't reconcile, we don't synchronize until Matot Maseh, which is combined in Chutz La'aretz in those kind of years and split here in Israel. And then for Devarim, we're back together. In any event, that's the difference in the statistics. Not important at the moment. Naso is by far the largest sedra. Number of psukim, number of words, number of letters, number of lines in the Sefer Torah that it's written on. Of course, that's the same as number of columns. Number one sedra in size. A relatively quick overview of the Sedra. The Sedra continues its beginning, is a continuation of that which was started in Bamidbar, where in Bamidbar there was a count of the people and a count of the tribes, the count of the camps, then the count of Levium in one way, and the count of Levium as far as the workforce in the Mishkan, and that was interrupted in the end of Bamidbar and continues in the beginning of Parshat Naso. So, we finish that count, and then the Torah speaks of those people who are sent outside of the camp, the Tsarua, the Zav, and a Tamei LaNefesh, three different categories of ritual impurity. One is someone inflicted by Tsara'at, various skin eruptions that declare him Tamei, someone who has a Zav emission, which is sort of like a sexually transmitted disease of certain types, and someone who becomes tummy from contact with a dead body. Each has a different restriction of where they're allowed to be. The Mitzora is sent outside the full camp. The Zav and Zava are sent outside of the Machane Levia, and the Tamei Meit is excluded only from the Beit HaMikdash area, which is called Machane Shechina. Just for your information, the first time I went onto the Temple Mount, I was coached and briefed by, among others, Rabbi Nachman Kahana, who explained to me that Yerushalayim has a certain status of sanctity. The Temple Mount has a higher level of sanctity, which is equivalent to Machane Levia, the Levite camp around the Mishkan. That part of the Temple Mount where the Beit HaMikdash stood, or where we suspect that its precincts reached, is considered Machane Shechina and is off limits for anyone who is Tamei Mate, which includes everybody today because we don't have the potion of the Para Aduma, the red heifer, to purify from that level of Tuma. But a person who is capable of going to the mikveh, ritual bath, to remove the Tuma that is referred to as Tuma Hayotze Min Haguf, the one that comes from his body himself, such a person is allowed in Machane Levia and excluded only from Machane Shechina. Bottom line, what this means for us today, even though there are people who state that one should not go onto the Temple Mount at all, I think that's more of a political kind of decision rather than a halachic decision. So let's not get too far into that issue, but the way that it was presented to me, if a person removes leather shoes and puts on the appropriate sneakers and or barefoot and knows the proper decorum for Temple Mount and goes to mikveh, then he would be allowed to go up onto the Temple Mount in that part of the Temple Mount that definitely was not where the Beit HaMikdash and its courtyards stood. And not to play games and not to go too far, but to really be guided by somebody who knows Har HaBayit and knows where you're allowed to go. It is a very special experience. It's something that can fill you with a joy and an immense sadness at the same time. When you see Arab kids playing soccer in an area that is identified as Mekom HaMizbeach, the place where the altar in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash stood, it rips you apart. What you're looking at in human form are what they say in the book of Echa, Shu'alim Hilchuvo. It's an amazing thing to witness, a sad thing. On the other hand, when you realize where you are and that you've gone beyond the Kotel, closer to the Beit HaMikdash, then your emotions can fill you with a longing that are supposed to bring us to prayer and to fruition. We'll be right back with more Torah Tibbetz audio for Parshat Naso and Shavuot. Moving right along with Parshat Naso, and I want to get to Shavuot very soon. After that comes something that really deserves more talking, but we'll do it at a different time, and that's a topic of repentance and confession about one's repentance process. After that, you have the whole issue of Sota, a wife suspected of infidelity, then Parshat Nazir. These are two big sections which we're not going to discuss now. That's followed by Birchat Kohanim, the mitzvah of the Kohanim to be the vehicle of blessing the people, a blessing from God. And this is done in most places outside of Israel only on Yom Tov, and in Eretz Yisrael every day, and in Yerushalayim and many other places. That includes twice on Shabbat, Shacharit and Musaf, and a third time on Yom Kippur Ne'ilah, and twice on fast days. It's a very, very special remnant, we'll say, of temple service, which is still done today, Birchat Kohanim. And the Parsha, the very long Parsha of 176 Psukim, finishes with the gifts of the Nesiim, of the leaders of the tribes, to the dedication of the Mishkan, and then the summary of the animals for sacrifices that were brought, the gold incense pans and the incense that was to be offered, and various and sundry other items that are given. And basically the Torah is at a point where everything is set for proper service of God and interpersonal behavior. And in next week's Sedra of Baalotcha, which is already in this week's Torah Tidbit, since we're not publishing next week, but Amir Hashem, we will do a show next Thursday, and I will be able to talk about Baalotcha then. I'd like to move over to Shavuot. But as an introduction, let's make a transition from Yom Yerushalayim to Shavuot. They are exactly 1 week apart, always fall out on the same day of the week. The connection should be what I referred to earlier, that the Yerushalayim that we aspire towards, that we long for, that hopefully we work towards, is a Yerushalayim HaBenuya, a rebuilt Jerusalem, which means with the Beit HaMikdash and everything in it. So there will be a shlemut, a completeness of Yerushalayim the way it is supposed to be, with Jewish life the way it is supposed to be, with the restoration of the Beit HaMikdash, with the restoration of Malchut Beit David. So the song, which I'm about to play from the very first Regesh album of quite a number of years ago, is about Yerushalayim, but it's about the Yerushalayim that Shavuot is about. And just as a side point, and maybe not a side point, 47 years ago, after the Six-Day War, the first time the public was given access to the Kotel was Shavuot, which was only a number of days after the war. And the connection is just there. Yerushalayim without Torah is hollow. Torah without Eretz Yisrael and the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is defective. And the Geula is represented by the realization of the potential Yerushalayim and the potential Shavuot. Regesh, number one. Okay, I've been talking about Shavuot a lot without it being the official topic of the conversation, but that's what it is. Now, as far as the holidays, let me give you just a little overview from Vayikra 23, which is Parshat HaMoadim, where one way of analyzing it goes like this. The Shalosh Regalim are Pesach, at the beginning, the Exodus, Shavuot, Torah and Eretz Yisrael, Sukkot, a mirror image or an echo or a focus on Pesach to Shavuot, because you have the 7 days beginning on the 15th of the first month of the year, Tishrei, first month of the year, Nisan, eating in the Sukkah, eating matzah, mitzvah, with a lot of parallels, and the Torah stated, Kiva Sukkot Hoshavti et Bnei Yisrael, we do Sukkot because God let us dwell, gave us to dwell in Sukkot, whether that means the heavenly clouds of glory, protection, or actual Sukkot is a dispute, we'll take them both, but there is a definite celebration of the Exodus from Egypt, not only in Pesach, but in its counterpart, 6 months later, Sukkot. And then the Atzeret of Sukkot is Shmini Atzeret. The Atzeret of Pesach is the eighth day, meaning following seven periods of 7 days each, the 50th day of Matan Torah, Simchat Torah. So Sukkot is a special focus on the Simcha aspect of Pesach to Shavuot. Similarly, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, beginning of Aseret Yemei Tshuvot, culmination of Aseret Yemei Tshuvot, the themes that are operative then find a focus in a Simcha period in Sukkot, with Hoshana Rabbah, with Tshuva Me'ahava, not just from Yirah, and since we're not really talking about Sukkot, we'll leave it at that, because Shavuot represents the receiving of the Torah and the coming into Eretz Yisrael. There are no specific mitzvot like you have on Rosh Hashanah with Shofar and Sukkot with the Sukkah and the Arba Minim and Pesach with Matzah. Shavuot has many, many minhagim which reflect the agricultural flavor and feature of the day, as well as the receiving of the Torah. Greenery. Just take that custom to decorate the house, and especially the shul, with greenery. It could be related to Har Sinai, because we have sources that indicate that Mount Sinai miraculously became verdant with vegetation for the experience of the receiving of the Torah. And that's why the animals were forbidden to graze on Har Sinai. You wouldn't have to tell animals that if it was just a barren hill or a barren mountain. But then you also have the fact that Bikurim baskets were decorated with greenery, and other things are tied in to that custom. Dairy foods, custom on Shavuot. We don't have time to go into everything with its full details here, but there is a two different tracks of food that are competing for our attention on Shavuot. One is meat, which is more associated with Simchat Yom Tov, and dairy, which is Shavuot specific. That's why many people will have a dairy meal at night, because the evening of Shavuot, the night of Shavuot, is more Shavuot specific, and the daytime is more generically Yom Tov, where they'll have a meat meal as part of Simchat Yom Tov, or it could switch, or there are people who have a little dairy meal, and they bench, and they break it up with a Dvar Torah, or a run around the block, or a game of chess, whatever, and then they have a meat meal. But there are many reasons that are given for dairy foods. I would say mostly related to the Torah aspect, and just let me focus on one, which is sort of a musing of my own, and that is that the laws of milk and meat are a microcosm of the whole picture of Torah. Torah in writing is cryptic. Excellent example, Lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo. Do not cook a gedi in the milk of its mother. What that means are volumes of halacha. What the Torah means when it says anything is magnified and clarified by the oral law, and it's very important, especially on the day that we are celebrating the receiving of the Torah, that we not separate and say we received at Sinai the Ten Commandments on tablets of stone. We didn't get them yet. We received the Torah. Wasn't written down yet. We receive all of the Torah, including the explanations which make up the oral Torah. All of that is part of revelation at Sinai, which began with the down payment of the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, but was immediately followed by Moshe Rabbeinu 40 days and 40 nights on Har Sinai to learn all of Torah and how to explain it to us. And it's all part of the picture. So if you take Torah as the macrocosm and milk and meat as one example, a culinary example, which means it's an example that could translate from the study hall and the synagogue to one's home and one's family setting, and therefore the custom to have dairy foods goes along with the study of that topic. What I'm suggesting basically is that when you're sitting at the table having dairy foods, the topic could be brought up in the interrelationship of the written word and the explanations and the whole picture of Torah, and it can be an interesting springboard. It's not the mainstream explanation for dairy foods. That goes with gematrias and play on words and a reference in Shir HaShirim to Torah being honey and milk under one's tongue. And there are some people who will have honey and milk or honey and yogurt or sour cream and have that at the Shavuot table as well, the dairy meal, of course, and various and sundry other aspects of that and variations of that. Tikkun Leil Shavuot, the custom of staying up all night and learning Torah. Again, preparation for the receiving of the Torah in the morning. The Book of Ruth, Megillat Ruth, is accustomed to be read This has also many different aspects to it. It took place at the time of the cutting of the wheat, which is Shavuot time, and it gives us the lineage of King David, who was associated with Shavuot, born and died on Shavuot. I would say the two other aspects of Megillat Rut that most focus us on important concepts is the chesed, the kindness that permeates the book from Ruth to Naomi and from Boaz to Ruth and for Naomi, etc. That chesed is the foundation upon which the Torah is given. There's an example of chesed at the beginning of the Torah and at the end of the Torah, and that's one of the major things that God is teaching us with Torah, and that's the book of Ruth. I would say most significantly the fact that Ruth represents for us an individual who came under the protective wings of the Shekhinah, to use the imagery which we use, and as an individual, when we are celebrating the national conversion of the family of Yaakov to become the Jewish people. And therefore, it's a microcosm, macrocosm example, but especially when we speak of the multitude of people that stood at Har Sinai, we tend to lose even ourselves in that large group. And Ruth focuses us on the individual. Ruth is one person who gives a passionate plea to Naomi not to force her to leave, but that her nation is her nation, and where she goes, I will go, etc. A very beautiful passage in Megillat Ruth, and a very worthy introduction to, or preparation for, the receiving of the Torah. Let me review for those who might not be as familiar as others. Today, Thursday. Tonight, tomorrow, is Rosh Chodesh Sivan, the day the Torah tells us we arrived in the wilderness of Sinai, Midbar Sinai. Subsequently, 6 days later, we received the Torah. Again, Friday is Rosh Chodesh, Shabbat is the second. Then you have the third, fourth, and fifth. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday this year are the 3 days before Shavuot, which represent the 3 days that Bnei Israel prepared to receive the Torah. Wednesday is the day we mark and celebrate as for the receiving of the Torah. And the following day, Thursday, is known as Isru Chag. Maybe we'll talk about that next Thursday as well. In the almost 2 minutes left, let me summarize the emphasis that I personally am taking to this year's Shavuot. Pesach is almost a simple thing. We got out of Egypt. We tried to relive the experience. So we came out of Egypt this year, as we've been doing for 3,300 years plus. Maybe what I'm saying is that from the Exodus, we have, as the people did, a journey ahead of them. The journey was a month and a half. The journey was 40 years. The journey has been 3,300 years. There is a goal. And the goal is not something that we have to work hard at trying to personalize and modernize for ourselves, because the goal is the same. The goal is Torah. The goal is Eretz Yisrael. The reward is Shavuot with the Beit HaMikdash. And it's not, what am I trying to say? It's not like play acting in order to get into the mindset of Ki'ilu, as if we came out of Egypt, because let's face the facts, we didn't come out of Egypt, our ancestors did. But the challenge of Torah, the challenge of Eretz Yisrael, the prayers and longing for Bikurim and temple service and everything that's involved with it is ours, not Ke'ilu, but actual. And that's maybe what I'm trying to say. So a person doesn't only commemorate the events associated with Shavuot, a person recommits, signs up again for the pursuit of Torah personally and what you can do for other people and Eretz Yisrael and how you could encourage other people as well. All of this together, I will wish you in the following order: a Chodesh Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Chag Sameach, Lehishtameach.